I mean, really, it's scary to think about how much of our produce is leaving us when we can provide our own food for us, but we're still selling it all somehow. So right off the bat, we knew we needed to start providing more local produce, keep it local, keep everyone eating it local, because then you're actually going to get that nutritional benefit from it if you're eating it right away and close to home.
Down to you.
Down to us.
It's down to all of us, together. The generations alive today will determine the climate and humanity's future.
This is Down to You Podcast.
The Down to You Podcast team acknowledges that our work spans many unceded territories and treaty areas. We recognize and honor that we are facilitating stories on lands stewarded by Indigenous nations since time immemorial. We are grateful for the traditional knowledge sharers, storytellers, and elders that are with us today, those who have come before us, and the youth that inspire us. And we're back with the Down to You podcast. Thanks for tuning in, folks.
Thanks for listening. I'm Alex.
And I am Hollis.
And today we're going to talk to some young people who don't mind getting their hands dirty.
Yeah. Today we're chatting with Katie Forsyth from Friendly Composting and Tessa McCamey of Farmstead Produce.
Both of these youth are working with cultivating earth and finding creative ways to use available land.
Indeed, yeah. One is working in the field of composting and the other with organic produce, which, as we're going to find out, are actually relatively tied.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
Yeah, let's get into it. First up, we're going to hear from Tessa, who's coming at us from Mission, BC. She's a farmer. She grows her food. And then after that, we'll be speaking to Katie, who's located in Kamloops, BC. She'll be talking about her composting business, Friendly Composting.
Let's dig in.
Alrighty.
Growing up, my grandma, Barb, has always been a huge advocate for anything to do with conserving water or composting, recycling, and just keeping the planet safe. So it's always been in the back of my mind. It's always been something that's been important to me. When I got out of high school, I actually did vet nursing, and I loved working with animals, but I was the person that was following everyone around whenever I found anything in the recycling bin that wasn't supposed to be there in the garbage, and getting mad at everybody and trying to get those systems in place in all of the offices and stuff so that we could all be recycling and composting easily and properly. But after a couple years of doing that, I realized that my soul wasn't happy and I was being in an office all the time. So one day I just kind of quit my job with no plan of what I was going to do, but I had been growing vegetables already in the backyard the last few years, and I knew I liked that. So I kind of found myself lost in the world and looking for something that had made sense and was important to me. And I just woke up one day and decided, I was like, I want to grow food, and I want to teach people how to grow food, and I want to learn how to make money doing it. And then slowly, as I got more into that industry, we started learning about no-till farming and regenerative farming, I suppose, and just learning how to do it in a way that was easier on the planet and produced a better quality food. And that's what got us into no-till farming. And now we're just learning as we go and just trying to stay involved with the community and keep growing food and teaching other people how to grow healthy food so that we can stop supporting the big guy and keep supporting the little guy, basically.
One thing I really like about her, and I feel like she really is like that down to you attitude, is she just starts with what she has. So she quits her job at the vet clinic. She says she's lost. So I'm thinking of her like lost in the world, not sure what to do. And she just turns to what she knows and what she already likes, like what she has available to her, and that is growing food. That's something important to highlight, because climate crisis, or even like what you're going to do with your life, can be like really overwhelming. But starting with a feeling or an intuition of what feels good, it's an example that she's showing here. And I think it's working out for her for sure.
Yeah, it's just like kind of a take things as they come approach, just following where life takes her and being flexible and being open to her instincts, I guess, seems to work out nicely.
Yeah, I think that's a really key thing to highlight and notice.
I actually live in Mission and I have like a pretty decent sized backyard where I have a big greenhouse and we were growing all the food for ourselves there. And I started kind of just expanding the backyard as much as I could. And then my dad's family owns property in Dewdney for gatherings and different things and stuff. And so one spring he just said, I'm going to start renovating the barn. Do you want to take over the garden? And so I took over the vegetable garden and expanded it by like 5 times or something like that. And this is our first year having it like fully up and running with our wood chip walkways in. And it's pretty crazy how far we've come in like the last few months here. So I grow in the greenhouse to start and we have some of the crops here in Mission and then the big stuff all gets grown down in Dewdney there. I'm working towards having like a greenhouse that would potentially be all year round, but financially we're just not there yet. But I'm also a ski and snowboard person. So I work up at the mountain seasonally for the last 15 years. And so it works out good for me to have found something that allows me to also pursue my winter passions at the same time. I've been doing the Mission Farmers Market for about, I think this is my 4th year now, I believe. Yeah, 4th year. And then I've actually kind of converted over to doing veggie boxes. I'm not actually doing a program yet, but I do friends and family weekly, bi-weekly, depends what everybody wants. When the vegetables get picked, we know that they already have a home. They go right into the boxes and right to people's homes. We don't pick any more or less than what we need, whereas the farmers market, you pick a whole bunch hoping you're going to sell it all. And now last week I didn't, so now I'm spending all week processing. So it's a fine line, making sure people have access to that produce and then processing it to make sure nothing goes to waste as well. So that's kind of where we're at right now.
This idea she has of her picking up clients who place orders with her for her local produce rather than picking things, bringing it to a market and selling whatever you can. I like this approach as a kind of a minimum waste method and keeping things ultra fresh too. I like that idea.
It's interesting because once you start growing your own food, then you realize like the food that you're getting from elsewhere, you're like, how did it make it to me? And it's still fresh. So yeah, that's one of the benefits, I think, to growing your own food. Our food system's quite crazy. Mm-hmm. And all the inner workings of it and all the chemicals that are used in order to make it work and make our food come to us like fresh and edible.
Mm-hmm. And that picking for specifically foragers is kind of a luxury of the small farming, the local production or individual production. Because a big industrial farm can't do that. They just got to, you know, grow their crops and ship them off and whatever gets sold gets sold. So in a way, it's kind of like a luxury perk for small farms.
Mm.
My dad taught me most of the things I know about vegetable farming, and spring comes and we get out the rototiller and we rototill the whole garden and then the weeds grow back within a couple weeks. So you rototill it again and then maybe you add some compost or something and you rototill that in and mix it in and now you do your planting and then a couple weeks later your weeds are all back. And so you're always battling the weeds versus your plants. And then the soil in turn ends up getting more and more compact. So we're struggling with this and struggling with this, thinking there's got to be another way. So we did a bunch of research and talked to a bunch of farmers locally and found out the cardboard method. So you have a patch of grass you want to turn into a garden. You lay down cardboard on the whole area and then you put good, healthy, like 6 inches at least of fresh, well-composted manure. And then plant directly right into that. You can plant seeds right into the compost. You can plant seedlings, whatever you want. And then within that couple weeks, as that cardboard breaks down, then now the vegetables will go through the cardboard and into the ground underneath. But now your weeds have all been killed underneath and you just have a healthy layer of fresh, fluffy soil on top rather than mixing that good soil in with all of your heavy stuff underneath. And then every year you kind of just top it up a bit more until your soil is just this rich, fluffy, beautiful result that you can don't even have to wash your vegetables anymore because they just pull out of it so easily. Also, every time we rototill, we're breaking up that healthy mycelium network that all the fungus and all the bacteria creates along the soil. And that's exactly what the plants want. That's exactly what helps keep away pests. And so every time we rototill, we're basically killing that healthy microbiome that the soil has produced for himself. And then we're seeing all of this disease and weed grow and pests, and we're wondering why. And then that's when people come in with sprays and artificial fertilizers and things like that, because they're not giving their soil what it needs to fight off all of the harmful stuff that's attacking their plants, I guess. So it's been really, really cool watching our soil regenerate itself. I would say this is second or third year of doing good, healthy amendment to the soil. That's the word I was looking for, amendment. We are seeing now that things just pull out. The weeds, you just grab them, they pull out. So you do a little bit of a weeding. There is always going to be some weeding, but now your weeds just pull out easily. When we rototilled, had to go along with a shovel to get every single weed or every single carrot or every single piece of garlic had to be shoveled out. But by next year, we'll have a really nice layer of composted leaves we're gonna try to put on top. So by spring, those are gonna break down and we're gonna plant right into that so that every year we don't have to put a fresh layer of compost, because it is a lot of work. So we're trying to switch it over so it's every second year, and we're using other mulches and stuff on top of those rows to keep the weeds down in between and stuff.
When she was describing that like rototill inefficient way, it made me think of the myth of Sisyphus, where the guy has to roll a rock up a hill and then the rock rolls down. And then the next day he rolls it up again. And that's just kind of a metaphor for life. But really for this too, it just seems so like you're just picking up after yourself every time you weed it. If we can find a way to get around that organically, like she has, it's really cool, really inspiring.
Yeah, I remember as a kid, that was my job, to like weed the garden. And I remember as a kid also, I was like so unimpressed with gardening. I didn't think it was a great thing. And now that I'm older, I think gardens are amazing and I can't wait to have a garden and share that with my children. And I'm like, how am I going to make this more enjoyable for my children? Like, don't make them weed.
Yeah.
Speaking of and thinking about this no-till farming and this regenerative farming, it seems like our soil is really suffering from like degradation and like losing key nutrients because of the way that we're using our soil and abusing our soil with the tilling and also the pesticides that are being sprayed. And we are kind of discussing what regenerative farming means. And so it just makes me think like composting. You're like putting old parts of the plant back into the soil in order to make new parts.
Mm-hmm. It seems like that keeps nutrients in the cycle.
Exactly, yeah. Mm-hmm.
One of the cool things about working with the Mission Farmers Market, there's another group of people that kind of came from the Farmers Market board, and they're trying to start like a co-op where we find land so that people can grow food on land that's not necessarily theirs, where we have like a co-op and work together, because we did a bunch of research and found out that like 90% of our produce gets shipped out and then 90% gets shipped back into us. So it's like, by the time we get it, it's got no nutritional value to it anymore. And it's also created like the most giant carbon footprint you can possibly create out of a load of lettuce, basically. So right off the bat, that was like our main motivator for starting that group, was to try to keep everybody eating food a little bit more locally. I've also done landscaping for like quite a few years with a couple of women. We tried really hard to convince all of our clients to steer away from traditional lawns or non-native plants and stuff in their yard. We worked really hard on incorporating sustainability and native plants into our landscaping when we were doing people's yards. And so as I started getting more into that and realizing how much of a scam the American lawn is, and people using all of this free space in their yard to just grow grass. So I'm just like, why do people grow this? Like, such a waste of time and money and water. And my grandma growing up was a flower gardener, and she slowly cut away more and more of her grass to turn it into a flower garden. I slowly started doing the same thing. I just wanted to get rid of more grass and turn more of it into a garden, because why would we want more lawn to mow when we could just have more vegetables to eat ourselves? And so that's how it kind of started in my backyard, was less lawn, more food, basically. And we're still kind of on that path. And then at the farm, same thing. We just keep wanting to cover more land with food and less grass. My cousin takes care of the grass down there, and she would like to have less to mow, and I would like to have more space to grow vegetables. So that was kind of our main motivator, was just take over whatever we can take over and turn it into garden.
Yeah, that's something that struck a chord with me, is this idea of why do we still have lawns that take up so much water? Mm. I mean, I grew up in Kelowna, and so many houses had lawns, including me when I was younger, in like a almost desert-like climate through the summer, just sucking up water to look green, I guess.
Yeah, I feel like, I don't know, I feel like lawns are like a part of the American dream. You know, you have your white picket fence, your lawn, your like husband and wife and their two children, one boy, one girl, like this kind of like dream that's been sold.
And also this sort of colonial thing of like human controlled land, such an unnatural sort of look.
Yeah. Then what if that lawn was used for pollinators or for food? You know, there's so many better options for how to use the land.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, every year we try something new. We're starting to do a flower cutting garden and reincorporating beneficial flowers for the garden. And it's taking up a lot of really good vegetable space. But in turn, these flowers take care of the pests on their own. Like, I want to say like 95% of the farms are spraying right now. And I think that that is one of the hardest things on our climate and our environment and our bodies. But sometimes you have to spray or you're going to lose everything. And whether it's an organic spray or not, it's still harmful to the system. And that is what's really messing up farming and our food that we're eating right now, in my opinion, is all those pesticides are really messing up the climate. And the more I've done research and the more I've met people that are doing the same thing, no-till sustainable farming is the future. And that's one thing that I've learned, is that if people are trying the other way, they're struggling. And if they're doing it right, they're usually doing no-till, sustainable regenerative farming in some way, a form or another.
That was Tessa, who we just heard from, a farmer out of Mission who's growing organic veggies and distributing them in the Lower Mainland.
Mm, yum.
Now let's hear from our next youth, Katie, who co-founded a composting business in Kamloops, BC.
Yeah, we talk a lot about how far food travels, because when we talk a lot about waste, you know, the average meal in Canada has traveled over 5,000 kilometers to reach your plate. And there's so much waste that happens along that distance. So on the boats, when it's coming over, when it gets to the port, there's a ton that's gone off. By the time it gets to the grocery store, there's more that's gone off that's been wasted. It sits in the grocery store and goes bad. So by the time you get, you know, that avocado, there's been thousands of pounds lost. So by shortening the food supply chain and making local food more accessible, we were hoping that would, you know, by default, come full circle again into the waste management piece of it, which from the beginning has kind of just been our goal. So we were identifying different gaps where waste was happening and waste was occurring, and trying to help mitigate that in some small way.
That was Katie, one half of Friendly Composting. Let's see how these two stories are intertwined.
My name is Katie Forsyth. I'm one of the co-founders and our CEO of Friendly Composting. We founded in March of 2020, so just with the onset of the pandemic. I was laid off. My roommate and best friend, Claire, she was working from home, and we got to talking a little bit about our waste at home. Her and I had both moved from communities that had green bin programs, and we were in an apartment and stuck at home more and didn't have access to not only a municipal composting program, but we didn't have a backyard to compost in, and we didn't really have any options in terms of a drop-off. There was nowhere we could take food waste to be processed. I had worked in the service industry for a long time, and COVID kind of slowed things down for us and gave us an opportunity to really assess processes in place at restaurants, especially. And so we started collecting our food waste at home. We kind of naively like drove it to a composting facility that was listed on Google in Kamloops. And then we were turned away because we found out that it was actually just yard and garden waste that they accepted, not food waste. So I called Claire on the way back from that, and I went, you know what, this is kind of an interesting niche opportunity community to figure out if there's maybe something we can do to put systems in place or provide collection systems. And there's probably a lot of people in our community who feel the same way about this. So why not? So we kind of started brainstorming what that would look like. And step one was kind of finding somewhere to process. So we got connected with Jillian Watt. She's a sustainable ranching program coordinator at TRU, and she owns a piece of land. So she helped us kind of initially build out some financials around it and did some modeling with subscription costs. And then she very generously donated us a piece of her land to compost on. So she was a huge part of our story early on. So once we had an idea of where to take it all, we found a bunch of repurposed bins off Craigslist and Kijiji and at the local thrift stores. And we just started giving them to friends and family and told them we'd be back in a week. Yeah, so we started collecting just out of my SUV and went back every week and just grew very organically, just through word of mouth. And with the pandemic, everyone was on their phones a lot more, trying to stay connected and updated with news. So we just launched an Instagram page and said, this is the plan. Does anyone want their food waste picked up? Initially, when we were in our own little bubble, it was just kind of a passion project, and we were both planning on going back to school in the fall. And then yeah, that just escalated really quickly. We were picking up for almost 500 homes a week within about 8 to 9 months, and got a tractor driving lesson from Jill so that we could turn the piles ourselves. And yeah, it was just the two of us basically from March until the middle of July. And then we had a volunteer join us, Parker. You know, the timing was perfect with having another body on board. And we basically told him we would pay him when we could. And he was our official first employee as of October. So 3.5 years, and we've grown exponentially. We service about 35 local businesses. So anywhere from restaurants, coffee shops, apartments, multifamily developments with our large bin program. And we're currently diverting anywhere from about 8,000 to 10,000 pounds a week between our residential program and our commercial program. We slowly, very grassroots sort of scaled everything. We went from my SUV to my SUV and a small utility trailer to a truck and the utility trailer. And then our team has grown a lot. For the first time, our entire payroll is entirely female identifying or queer identifying humans, which is really special, especially in this industry that is very male dominated. And yeah, that's kind of how Friendly began. We identified a gap in our community, a need for a service. We were looking for a way to build something that had a lot of purpose to it and being able to scale to meet the needs of more and more people.
She kind of talks about the pandemic, which we spoke about a little bit when we were thinking about Tessa's story. Again, that kind of, what are we doing? Like a reset, a kind of, yeah, a reconsideration of your day-to-day and what's happening in your life. And
yeah, again, that idea of the pandemic spurring some changes in the world and changes in people's personal lives and kind of an incubator of new ideas of how we can be and how our cities should work and how our culture is flawed in certain ways.
Yeah, and I'm finding this with other youth that I'm talking to about for this podcast. Is this idea of community support. So in the beginning, they identified that problem about compost, but they still didn't necessarily have a place to compost because you need land for that. So that's kind of part of the land use conversation. And so she connected with the sustainable ranching program coordinator at Thompson Rivers University, and that person donated land. And so I just want to call back that idea that community support is so huge. Like, I don't think many people do this on their own. And yeah, you never know until you reach out, like who's there and who's available and who's willing to support you. And so I just want to give a shout out to that ranching coordinator. I think Jillian, she said her name was. And, you know, I'm grateful there was someone there to offer that support when they needed this to then like continue on this really amazing venture that they started in 2020.
Mm-hmm. And it really wouldn't be possible to scale up like they did without that sort of contribution to have that land.
So in July of 2020, we became vendors at the farmers market, and we got connected with local farmers to help deliver their food. With the onset of COVID, the market had shut down and a lot of farmers were obviously still very active. And for nearly 2 years, we delivered basically boxes of food with our compost bins. But what that did was really open our eyes to regenerative agriculture in general. So each new farm we brought on, Claire and I went and toured, and we actually got to hear like all of their stories, and they showed us about their processes and systems and decision-making around use of pesticides and fertilizers and what they used to replace them. And compost soil was just such a natural fix. What compost soil does is basically act as a fertilizer. It allows food that comes from the ground to go back into the ground and to help grow more food. The nutrient levels in compost soil is so high and helps with water retention. So farmers who use cover crop or compost soil don't have to use much water. So there's less waste when growing local food. So what we want to focus on with our food delivery program is connecting with farmers who use those practices, who really focused on the environmental impact of farming, and try to educate our community on why that's important and why it mattered to source local food. Just a fun fact, but in the 2 years we did that program, we kept over $150,000 in our local economy through food delivery program. So that's just like straight into the pockets of farmers. And that was so important to us because our goal from the beginning has been impact driven and purpose driven and being able to scale to meet the needs of more and more people. October of 2021, we had scaled so far beyond our capabilities in terms of woman hours that we had available. So we actually made the decision to partner with another local farm called Spawhills Compost Farm in Salmon Arm. They've been our processing partner for nearly 2 years now. And what that did was allowed us to also take on more acceptable items so we could process meat and bones and bioplastics. Because before, when we were processing on the local sheep farm, we didn't really want to attract any pests or anything into the area. I think there is some merit to having more farmers involved. They're like distributing the work, making lighter work, getting more land involved on the processing side of things, and really kind of making it a full community effort to both pick up and process the waste. And when I think about almost like putting systems in place again, the connection piece and finding farmers and sourcing out land, I feel like there's so much purpose that can be given to a farmer that's helping with those types of projects and helping process the waste and using that really, really valuable soil in their own agricultural practices or encouraging a lot more regenerative agriculture practices through that. So it's kind of like two pieces of it, because that was definitely like the way that we started. We really want to focus on processing soil locally. And so from like a hauling and processing perspective, we've kind of taken a step back a little bit, and our focus became more of the education and the systems and getting restaurants, you know, getting all of their staff on board and getting into more like schools and nonprofits to talk about the importance of why we compost, as well as regenerative agriculture and shortening the food supply chain.
After learning from these youth, Tessa and Katie, about the kind of benefit, and like compost seems like gold. Like it's so good for our soil. It's so good for the regeneration of our soil and the regrowing of fruits and vegetables. It just makes me sad to think how much of it goes to waste.
Mm-hmm. Compost is gold. I like that.
I'm like, oh, I kind of want to like start my own composting on my patio this winter and like save that for gardening next year.
Yeah. Interesting, too, that she said compost soil uses less water, which I didn't know.
Yeah.
Like, significantly less amounts of water.
I wonder why that is, like, if it
holds its moisture more.
It holds it more, yeah. Probably because it's not so compacted. It's not all, like, tight and dense. It's more loose and fluffy.
Yeah, lots of different chapters. The city of Kamloops is introducing a municipal-run composting program, so we're navigating sort of that pivot, and we've been really fortunate to have a very open line of communication with the city, and they've been keeping us in the loop around timeline. But as of last week, our residential program has pretty much wrapped up, which is a very bizarre feeling. Yeah, because it is. It's just like it's been our baby. We've serviced over 1,500 homes in the last 3.5 years. So the community that we've built is just incredible. And the messages we're receiving, and our composters are getting, like, we have stacks of cards being left on the final bin, and with well wishes from everybody. And just, yeah, it's really special. And my business partner, Claire, has been doing her master's the last 2.5 years. And she's doing her thesis in environmental economics. And one of the things, like, she's saying she so wishes she could measure is the societal impact sort of what this program has done and what it's done for people's habits and that shift in conversation that needed to happen for our community. So there's a lot of people who tried to kind of like credit us with like motivating the city. But I mean, we touched base with the city so early on, and it was definitely something that was going to come down the pipeline. So none of it was a surprise. And from the beginning, we've always been really positive towards having the city take this on, because we were picking up, you know, for 700 homes a week, and they can do 100,000 people. So it's going to be a really great positive shift for our community, but it's nice to have been credited with some of that, yeah, inspiration, I guess. And there is still a gap to be filled within city limits. They're not going to be servicing restaurants or apartments or multifamily developments or events. And so even the city hires us for a lot of local events. And we are working with local grocery stores and continuing to encourage stratas and property management companies to come on board. And then our Tecumloops band has been a really close partner to us. So we're working on a proposal for chief and council this fall to service the entirety of residents on the reserve and every business and food waste producing business. So that's a proposal in the mix right now, which would be really great for us. We're working really closely with a social enterprise accelerator called Purple out of Kelowna, helping us kind of navigate this pivot and make strategic decisions. From the beginning, we just really wanted our program to be both accessible and affordable. So we've operated on very, very tight margins the last 3.5 years. And so now when we're building out our sort of event service rates and our commercial rates, we really want to try to measure and see what the value added of, you know, having that clean bin every week, having the educational resources, the marketing materials, the in-person orientations we do with staff, like what all that costs, all the extra things that we do, rather than having a very traditional, you know, tip and go style of waste management. So we're just trying to price ourselves accordingly and make sure that it's scalable and profitable.
Yeah, one thing I really liked was that she did make a business out of it and she is running it sustainably, like making profit.
I feel like Friendly has gone through so much evolution as well. They started in one kind of vein, and now when we spoke with Katie, it was maybe the fires were still really going on in Kamloops. It might have been August. And she says now they're focusing their efforts on education, which is definitely a big piece of this conversation. The more people that know, the more people that are aware, the more impact we can have. Yeah, get people more involved with thinking about their food and how it comes and how it grows and what is necessary to grow healthy, safe, fresh food.
I have a background in education, and there was definitely a lack of education in our community because there hadn't been systems in place. Even just through this, we've learned so much about the recycling program and what happens to it downstream and how, you know, even the smallest contaminant in your recycling bin can, you know, mean that your entire bin goes back to landfill. And when you get a community like Kamloops, who, you know, we had access to 8 landfills within 10 kilometers of us. So it's like, no one's stressed. They're like not worried about it. But if we had one, then they're probably, this would have been in place 10, 15 years ago. But we're just not feeling the pressure. And so what we are is at the epicenter of every natural disaster in the Okanagan, and we're dealing with record-breaking temperatures year after year and flooding. And it's just, it sounds like so awful to say, but it's such a wake-up call. It should just be a wake-up call for everyone that these like unprecedented temperatures actually are predictable and they're preventable. And if we work together, we can actually decrease a lot of this. And we're just sitting in the middle of all this methane gas that's being produced around us. And yeah, with not really any education around it. So there's a change that has to happen where people ask more questions. And so we really try to educate people through our social media channels and our newsletters and kind of share why food waste needs to be diverted from landfills. And we also service a ton of local events. So again, our bins are kind of on site and there's thousands of people that interact with them rather than doing the one bin door to door. So we're hoping that that inspires more of a change systemically where people are given access to bins, you know, at local events, or when they're out dining, they see our little sticker that restaurant is a proud composter. And that in terms of impact, is like a hard thing to measure, but that's definitely like where our efforts are focused on right now. From the beginning though, Claire and I really focused on like the narrative we wanted to share and make sure that Friendly felt like a very safe space for people to come and go, I don't know what I'm doing, or I don't know, and my bad, but for the last 40 years, I've been thrown in the garbage, like teach me. That is so valuable to see. And what that does for the decrease in garbage at home and what it's done to change the conversations within, you know, with their family and their kids. And so we've just wanted it to be a very safe and inclusive space and have that sort of positive messaging around it, not always like the doom. Yeah, that's a huge driver for us. It's just like, all we can do is get up every day and pick up the bins and just do what we can and like just contribute in some small way. So, yeah.
Man, I want to just say bravo to Katie and Tessa on being creative and making the most of what's available to them.
Yeah, it's one of those topics that is an everyday thing for people. We eat food every day, we go to the grocery store, but we rarely think of the history of that food, where it comes from, how it gets to us, and also an impact on the environment. And it's cool to take a little bit of time to hear what these two have to say about it, because they've really thought deeply about this and have some unique perspective and some really cool wisdom on the subject.
Yeah, and it's almost like two different like ends of the same spectrum. Like, they're both interested in regenerative farming, Tessa being interested in the growing of the food and Katie being interested in the replenishing soil with food waste.
Yeah, two things that go hand in hand.
Indeed, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I found it really inspiring hearing some of the methods they're using, and I tried to take a lot of tips from what they were saying, and hopefully next year when it gets warm again, implement those into my own practice. But I really like to hear their advice on some of these things, even if they didn't mean it as advice. That's how I took it.
I mean, I eat a lot of fruit and vegetables. I'm taking the compost out almost every day sometimes, it feels. And I also grow a garden. So I'm like, am I missing like a golden opportunity to recycle within my own cycle? And I've looked up online like bucket composting. That's something that might be accessible to me, but I haven't had the courage to just try it out yet. But these girls are definitely pushing me in that direction.
Mm-hmm. I feel strongly about growing food, especially in the city. And I remember seeing this motto, maybe it was at Shambhala or somewhere in the Kootenays, that just said, grow food everywhere, which I really stand by, especially in the city when people have limited access to food sometimes and groceries can be prohibitive. And we have all this space with rain and sun and possibility of growing food right in our backyards, literally and figuratively. And you do see it, like there's community gardens that pop up. I know there's spots in my neighborhood in particular that have the roundabouts all growing food and flowers that attract bees and that sort of thing.
Yeah, pollinators. Exactly.
Pollinators.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So you do see it a little bit, and it's always nice to see. Provides food. It provides a variety of plants. It looks nice, smells nice, makes for a better neighborhood.
I just always think about the land that's sitting waiting for development.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking of too.
Just sits for years empty. And I just wish we could be more creative about how we use that land. You know, have movable garden boxes or movable composting bins. Like, I'm not sure exactly, but I do think that there's opportunity there, and that what we need from ourselves, from everybody, from folks in power, folks with money, I'm not sure where the change starts. I mean, it can start small, it can start big, but what we need is like a more creative outlook on how to use land. Something I find that these two stories have in common, besides the fact that they're centered around food, is they both start from humble beginnings. They don't start with the end in mind. They don't start with some big vision. They go with the flow and they find themselves in a really beautiful place of alignment, I would say, or at least doing something that they feel passionate about. And
I also like how there's an emphasis on locality, on growing things locally, on starting movements locally, composting locally, and how there's a connection with neighbors in their community for both of these initiatives.
Yeah, I like that. That's a good parallel that you draw between them. They both have kind of a community feel in different ways and elevate the importance of community and community support.
And it makes sense as the place to start.
Exactly.
Build stuff from the ground up. You got to start with your surroundings and where you are.
You have the strongest connection to that place and probably the most knowledge about it.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I loved hearing from Katie and Tessa.
Me too.
But that's all we got for today.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Hope you enjoyed that as much as we did and found that really interesting.
And inspiring.
Check us out for the next episode when we're going to explore the subject of tourism and start thinking about meaningful ways we can pursue it.
Yeah, I love to travel, to get out there and see new places. So I'm excited to dig into this episode and see how I can be more thoughtful and intentional with the places I choose to visit.
All right.
See you then.
On this journey through BC, we've met some incredible youth with some amazing stories about things they're doing. It's been really inspiring seeing this generation take initiative on ecological and environmental issues. The Down to You podcast wouldn't be possible without our wonderful production team and funders. From the Fraser Basin Council Youth Program, we have Sonia Dodig, Hollis Nelson, Nicole Gonzalez-Filos, and Lindsay Sackett. Also, a big thanks to our collaborators, Vedluna Studio, Pendimental Sound Production, ZG Stories, and Maya Lazar Mulabdic for her beautiful illustrations. This project was undertaken with the financial support of the Government of Canada through the Federal Department of Environment and Climate Change. Thank you, everyone, for listening.